Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
What kind of fiends is this, Michael?
Freedom fiends.
Freedom fiends, that's right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. So this, we've been messing with a lot of sound issues because we're getting ready for our Sunday live, first live call-in episode of Freedom Fiends Live.
Woo! Freedom Fiends Live! Yeah, boy!
Yeah. But unless there's sound issues with the configuration we're using, this may be the best sounding podcast that's ever been recorded. Now, why is that, Nima?
Because my birthday present just arrived in the mail from Michael W. Dean. And what is it? It's a Natey ribbon mic. What is it called? A Natey 5. That's it. Yeah.
Big RSM 5. Oh, yeah. I have the RSM 4, which I seem to have bought the last one, and then they discontinued it. And I tried to buy it for you, and they dicked me around for weeks. And then
well, that's how cold you are, Michael. You rocked the Natey 4 so hard that they were like, ah, oh, we just can't make these anymore. You literally broke not only the mic, but the whole genre of that mic.
Yep. Well, John Natey, people don't like him where I'm from in the Bay Area in San Francisco, because the guy who owns that company bought all the clubs and made them pay to play.
Yeah, that's a pretty dick move. Although in Lippert, yeah. Well, in Libertarian Paradise, other people would just start their own clubs.
Because in Libertarian Paradise, you wouldn't need a liquor license, so you could just have your barn be a rock club with liquor.
Yeah, there you go. That's the solution. See, and that's usually the solution in LibPair, is there wouldn't be all sorts of hoops you got to jump through to compete, so more people would compete.
Yeah, and you wouldn't need a business license. And, you know, I have this friend, the guy that played guitar in Bomb, really good friend of mine, Doug, worked at and managed, and I think even like co-owned eventually, this really cool rock and roll gay bar in San Francisco. And he was an Obama voter, and he's like, this politics will fix everything. And, you know, nothing to do with Obama, but the Democrat statist creeps running the city council in San Francisco, like, closed down his bar, took away their liquor license so they could like sell it to a more profitable bar. And he still liked politics, and I was like, really, you still like politics after that? You think politics can fix things? You think the state can fix things? And he's like, whatever, Michael.
Whatever, Michael. I won't even defend my position. I'm just gonna be like, huh, I don't care.
I know. So we are having a contest to win a Freedom Fiends calendar. And the way you enter, you go on iTunes and review us, rate and review us. Doesn't have to be a good review, but just rate and review us and then let us know. Or go on Amazon and review the Guns and Weed movie and let us know. That's how you enter.
Yep, yep. And it's not based on how great your review is or how glowing it is or how many stars you gave us. We're just going to put everybody who did it for the contest into a hat and have DJ pull them out and read a name. So luck of the draw.
Yep, yep. Hey, I came up with a good justification for internet piracy.
A justification for piracy?
Yeah.
I don't think it needs a justification.
Well, I've got a good one here. In the United States, in most countries, but definitely in the United States, any contract that you sign while intoxicated is legally invalid. Mm. All musicians are intoxicated all the time. So every recording contract, or 98% of recording contracts that have ever been signed, are invalid.
There you go.
So all the copyrights that the recording industry owns are moot.
They're bullshit. They don't count. Except, of course, for Christian rock, but nobody wants to pirate that anyway.
I know. I was listening to the Adam Curry podcast, the No Agenda podcast, and he was playing this this recording of some Utah senator or congressman who's like one of the main movers and shakers of trying to get SOPA passed, who's saying, we don't mind P2P if it's legitimate. What we mind is, and it was some term I've never heard, it was like P2P3P, and he described that as peer-to-peer pornography, privacy, and piracy. And I'm like, really? You put privacy in there? Like, you know, he has a problem with people having privacy on the internet.
Right, so I guess what he's probably talking about is crypto-anarchism, like Tor and stuff like that? I see. He doesn't want you to be able to circumvent the state, which is sort of their whole thing anyways. Anytime they do these kinds of SOPA things, what they're really trying to do is gain more control into some of the places that have been able to get away without being controlled.
Worms.
So, that's square.
Speaking of worms, we got a Mumble server today and started a channel called Worm Island.
Yeah, go ahead and explain what Mumble is, because people probably don't know.
Mumble is it's an internet telephony, however you say it, telephony program, you know, kind of like Skype, like you can talk over the internet. We're using it right now to talk, and it actually has much higher sound quality than Skype. And it's what we're going to use to talk into the LRN server for our Sunday show. And we're testing it today, you know, so we can go out streaming over the LRN feed and worldwide through their or all through North America through their satellite radio.
Right. And it sounds completely great. And, you know, when we first got picked up by LRN to syndicate our podcast, Ian asked us if we want to do a live show.
I was afraid. You wanted to.
I wanted to. The only thing that was really holding me back was I didn't understand how it would work technologically. Since we're in two different states, I figured one of us would have to call in to the other one. And so at least one of us would have crappy audio.
Nope.
But not with Mumble.
Gamers to the rescue, man. Gamers to the rescue. This is a program that was made by and for hardcore gamers so they can have like 20 people yelling at each other while they're playing online games together.
Yeah, there was no government program that needed to invent that. People just were like, I want to be able to hear myself talking about teabagging the dead dude I just killed, so I'm going to create this Mumble.
Yeah, and it's $4 a month to get a Mumble server at mumble.com if you want one, if you want to have private, encrypted conversations with your friends.
Yeah, and it sounds completely clean. When we were on it with Ian going over some of the settings, you know, you could actually hear how good our mics were. Yep. It wasn't like talking on the phone or talking on Skype, which, you know, in my interviews I've done with Skype, it's actually not too bad, but it doesn't even come close to Mumble.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to be able to get interviewees to install and configure Mumble, but I would do it if you can.
If I can. I mean, maybe if I'm interviewing some tech-savvy guy or somebody who already has it.
So I had a good freedom fix the other day.
Yeah?
Me being freedom-minded. I went for a walk, one of my rare treks out of the house.
Is it warm enough to do that in Wyoming yet?
Yeah, it's like 55 degrees today. a couple blocks from my house on the ground, I found an SD card. You know, like a card for a camera.
Right, right.
And it was in the little plastic, you know, flip-open container they're in, but one side of it was missing, so it was really dirty. And I picked it up. I was like, And I took it home, and I cleaned it off and cleaned it really well, like with a cloth and then with alcohol, and then let it dry and put it in, and it took a while to get it to recognize. And then it recognized. The first batch of pictures was a bunch of pictures of the Casper Parade days.
All right.
With, like, a lot of emphasis on the roller girls. And then the second batch of pictures was this couple. I don't recognize them, but there's someone from my neighborhood, but I don't recognize them. I'm assuming they're from my neighborhood because I found it near here. It was this couple who were like probably 60 years old. The lady was really plump. The guy was really creepy looking. They were not attractive, and they were being kind of unattractive in this. They were like, it was in a hotel room, and there was no sex, but it looked like they were getting ready for sex. They were being really coy with the camera, and the lady was sticking her boobs out. And the guy was like up in the camera's face, and he looked like he was on drugs. And then there was a third person in the pictures who was a woman that was like probably about 30 that looked like she used to be pretty but wasn't anymore, like kind of rode hard and put away wet.
And yeah.
She was like dressed really slutty, like something was about to happen, and she was there was a big pile of coke or speed next to her.
Ooh.
So
sounds like a fun night, I guess.
It does. It does. You know, in LibPair, unless that younger woman wanted to, she wouldn't have to have sex with the old creepy people for coke or speed. But, you know, I didn't turn it into the police. I didn't complain to the school board. I looked at it a few times.
A little kid could have found this. I know. How horrible.
Then I overwrote it three times with DOD grade encryption and then took it out and shot it.
What'd you shoot it with?
Oh, 22.
Nice. That must have been satisfying.
Yep. It flipped it, but chipped it in half.
So what do you think a statist would have done?
Demanded the government guns do something about it. Let those people be punished. Or, you know, a younger person who's not necessarily a statist, but kind of doesn't have a lot of morals, would probably put it on the internet and make fun of them.
Yeah.
Turn it into like a shut up little man phenomenon.
Right.
You know, shut up little man sounds like what the government says to us, doesn't it?
Pretty much. I feel like that's the underlying sense behind those form letters you get back if you ever were dumb enough to write your congressman. We appreciate your feedback. I think the subtext is, shut up little man. Let me do this.
You know, one of Adam Curry's websites is shutupslaves.com. He's a funny guy. He's the guy that invented podcasting and
also liked our movie and
blurbed it.
Right. What did he say about our movie? He said, "This is truly America," or something to that effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he also helped promote our, what's now a meme, the "Don't Drone Me, Bro." You were telling me he went to some conference after seeing our movie or some protest with a sign that said, "Don't Drone Me, Bro."
Yeah. And he also went around New York City putting up street signs that looked like real parking signs, or not parking signs, but like those temporary signs that the city puts up, you know, when they're like doing something to let you know.
Like a road work sign.
Yeah. That said, "Drone activity in progress," with a picture of a silhouette of a drone.
Good. I'm glad somebody else is as anti-drone as us.
Oh, yeah. He calls, I think he lives in Texas now. He calls Texas the Drone Star State.
Yeah. Man, I really wish I could live by my family and not have to live under such an oppressive police state, you know?
Yeah. Well, that has become a meme. I'm sure somebody else would have come up with it. It makes sense after the "Don't Tase Me, Bro" phenomenon. Yeah. But "Don't Drone Me, Bro," I mean, I literally cannot find anything on the internet before the last chapter of our movie where we're, you know, explaining the movie and saying if we're ever found dead of a drug overdose, a car crash, or an apparent suicide, there was a government agency behind it. And we put a poster on the wall that's my cat, Fuzzy, sticking his tongue out. And it says, "Don't drone me, bro." And then there's a drone behind us. And that was a year and a half ago that went up on the internet. And it's become a meme. Like, there are people that aren't us that are selling t-shirts that say, "Don't drone me, bro."
Sweet.
And a lot of people think Adam Curry made it up because he's famous and he uses it. First of all, he could borrow anything he wants from us because he invented podcasting. So without him...
Without him, there'd be no fiends.
I know. There would be, but it'd be a blog. A blog. But secondly, hang on a sec. There's someone at my door. Talk.
Talk. I hope he's not getting droned. You know, how funny would that be? Hello. "Don't drone me, bro." Knock, knock, knock. Boom. I'm just picturing like the SNL scene where the shark is knocking on the door saying he's the pizza man. And then you open the door and it's like a dude in a drone costume. Boom.
Excellent.
What'd you get?
I got cables that we're going to need to do our call-in stuff on Sunday.
Ah, score. Yeah, our plan before that was to hold the phone up to the microphone.
Well, we may end up doing that for a while. We tried that and it works, but I have to like hold it up, let the person talk, and then pull it back and listen to them and turn the volume down and ride the mic each time I move it back and forth.
Requires quite a bit of multitasking on your part.
Yep.
Unless you can convince DJ to do it.
No, she's going to be in the other room with it behind a closed door monitoring us on a third computer just to make sure we sound good and there's no echo, and come in and let me know if anything's wrong.
She's doing quality control.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. Ooh, here are the two cables. Yes.
Yes.
It took me like 4 hours to find this combination of cables. I have to have something that goes from a tiny phone jack to a 2 mono quarter inch headphone jacks out.
Did you get it on eBay? Where'd you get it from?
No, I got it on like trianglecables.com or something.
Okay.
Man, with all this like recording stuff in the room, it's like mission control in here. I have like 3 computers, 2 mixers, four microphones. It's weird.
That's got to make you feel good, though. I always feel good. The more gear I have around me, I feel like I'm a transformer, and I got to like, or like a Power Ranger. I feel like
we're transforming society. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I couldn't possibly spend my money on anything other than audio gear and guns. You know? I mean, I dress like a bum, so I don't spend money on clothes, so I can do this.
And treats for your kitties.
And treats for my kitties and my wife. But so, the thing about that I don't like about the Don't Drone Me Bro meme is two people lately have accused me of, and other people have probably thought it. They're like, oh, I saw that at the end of your movie. You stole that from Adam Curry.
People have said that?
Yeah. Ugh. Which I've encountered before when I interviewed Fetus, this artist named Fetus. You ever heard of him?
No.
Also known as Jim Thirlwell. I interviewed him for the DIY or Die movie, and he was one of the inventors of industrial music. Like, he did stuff that sounded a lot like Nine Inch Nails when Trent Reznor was still in his parents' basement in Ohio playing like air keytar in front of the mirror to a Devo song while wearing a flower pot hat, you know? But then he said that, like, you know, I asked him, like, how do you feel about people like Nine Inch Nails making millions of dollars off a sound you created? And he said, I don't mind at all. What I do mind is when people come up to me and say, you sound just like Nine Inch Nails. You copied them.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, maybe the Adam guy, he's more popular, or maybe he's the one who popularized it, in which case.
He's a saint, man.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he put one in every garage.
Exactly.
Yeah. With government guns and then started wars. Didn't he start the Spanish-American War, or was that Rockefeller?
No, I think that was Hearst.
Ah. Yeah, I think those guys used to get together and, like, drink the blood of infants. And
I was always under the impression that Henry Ford was a fairly, I wouldn't say libertarian, but he wasn't in that same cabal of evil guys, or at least he had some kind of say against it. I remember reading quotes from him that were anti-Federal Reserve.
But he was racist, which, you know, isn't necessarily you could be a libertarian and a racist as long as you don't oppress people, which liberals have a real problem with. They're like, no, you can't be racist. He said, when bankers were trying to take over his factory, he said, I'll tear my factory down brick by brick before I let those Jews get a hold of it.
Okay, so maybe he was right for the wrong reasons then.
Yeah, he was against the bankers. See, that's another thing too, is if you're against central banking, people think you're anti-Jewish. And they're not all Jews, man. There were some Gentiles that used to go to Whore Island and drink the blood of a virgin and cores and make up the Federal Reserve on a cocktail napkin. Right.
Yeah, there's no direct line of logic there. I mean, that's like saying you're racist against black people because you don't watch basketball or something. It's just a non sequitur.
So anyway, the name of this podcast is Don't Drone Me, Bro.
Don't Drone Me, Bro.
You know, somebody's been posting a picture of a drone that looks like it's through the scope of a rifle that says, Don't Drone Me, Bro. It's been going around.
Yeah. I don't think drones fly low enough to hit them with a rifle.
No, but I think that reposting that image could get you in trouble. I don't have the balls to use it.
I don't know. I kind of feel like, f*** the government. I mean, what are they going to do? Are they going to drone me because of that?
No, they'll come and take away your guns.
Ugh, I wouldn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
I love my guns. I sleep next to them at night. Yeah. And look at them longingly when I wake up.
I pet them. I do that with microphones. I did that with guns the first year or two I had them. You'll get over that. And then want more audio gear.
You see, I used to talk about getting more audio gear last year, and you'd be like, no, man, get more guns. So I guess I've reached the gun threshold, and now it's time to get more audio gear.
Well, you have a pistol, a shotgun in hand, a rifle. You're set.
Yeah. I do need a semi-automatic rifle. That's what I'm missing.
I don't know, man. A lot of wars are won with Mosins. A lot of wars were lost with Mosins, too, but...
Yeah, true that.
So I've been learning the NATO phonetic alphabet, and I discovered that using it confidently with customer service makes them far less likely to be chatty and more likely to just help you and then get off the phone.
Because you sound like you mean business, right?
Yep. Or you sound like you're from the government and they're worried.
Well, see, I could totally see that because when you're working tech support, there's a few different kind of callers. And if a caller starts off being business, you know, great, I can get a quick call out of this or whatever. You know, I can get the problem taken care of. This is a person who understands things. Whereas the opposite end of the spectrum would be, you know, an older person who doesn't know what Wi-Fi or email is. So
yeah,
if you start off with the NATO alphabet, that's a good sign for a tech support person.
As they say on Peep Show, I just always thought that old people were just like us, except they think that when you open a window on a computer, the other windows disappear forever.
That's so true.
So last cast, I said that the name Frank means shortened to the point, speaking of being shortened to the point, but it could also mean it doesn't have any like good quality in it necessarily like Ernest does. But I wanted to, I forgot to say, your brother Frank is not a scumbag. He's a good guy.
No.
He's Ernest.
Yeah. Frank's a great guy. But I think you were just trying to say that Frank is, it's neutral. It just means honest, right. But it could mean brutally honest as well as, you know, a nice guy kind of honest, like I'm an honest dude.
Right. You know, one of the best punk rock names I ever knew was, there's this band called The Feeders with a Z, and their singer was named Frank Discussion.
Nice, nice. Obviously, yep. Wasn't his real name.
Yep. They had a song called Jesus Entering from the Rear, and it was on this compilation called Let Them Eat Jelly Beans, which had a picture of Ronald Reagan on the cover of it.
Okay. Sort of an amalgamation of Marie Antoinette and Reagan.
Reagan hating poor people. My roommate in college had a copy of that tape, and I was in love with this Christian girl. She heard the tape, and when I went to the bathroom, she like destroyed the tape, my roommate's tape.
Jeez. Talk about disrespect for property rights.
Nanny bitch.
I don't even understand why she would do that. I mean,
because she felt like she had God's permission to purge the world of one copy of that song.
But I would call that stealing. I mean, I think she broke the Ten Commandments there, didn't she?
You know, I think she paid him for it, too, which doesn't really make it much better. But, you know, he freaked out and I freaked out. And she's like, how much was the tape? And then he's like, thanks, I'll go buy another one.
Yeah, exactly. She did it grudgingly. She didn't do anything good, just evilness. Yeah.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
And now, some corporate whoring for one of our favorite products.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Howdy, I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmith's. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmith's. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kiddies.
Vaporsmith's e-cigs revolutionize nicotine ingestion by bringing it into the 21st century. With Vaporsmith's, you'll enjoy all the invigorating nicotine with none of the nasty smoke. Vaporsmith's are clean, efficient, and tasty. Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, classics, Turkish, menthol, strawberry, cherry, vanilla, coffee, minty mint, and cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Vaporsmiths. I'm enjoying one right now.
Roland.
We're just talking about Dave Chappelle's When Keeping It Real Goes Wrong. Wu-Tang, bitches.
Yeah, where the lawyer ends up having to work in a gas station because he flipped out and kept it real.
Because he kept it real.
Yeah. Yep. And I had an experience. I was wondering if in New Jersey, and I'm not sure on the facts of this, do they force you to get your gas pumped like by a full service attendant instead of
probably
yourself?
New Jersey's like California. Everything's illegal and everything that's not illegal is mandated.
It's mandatory, yeah. Well, in Oregon here, they have a similar law. Like, you can't do self-serve whenever you're at a gas station.
Oregon? You're not in Oregon.
No, but it's like 30 minutes.
You're in Washington.
30 minutes to the south of us. And one day my wife was like, let's go on a drive. I just want to drive to Oregon and drive back. So we drove to Oregon, and by the time we got there, we were running low on gas. So we're like, well, let's get gas. And I had forgotten it, but it rang a bell. I was like, huh, I wonder if they're going to let us pump our own gas. And so I got out, and I didn't see anybody. So I go to reach for the pump, and all of a sudden this hand grabs it. And it's this dude who looks like a meth head. Like, he's got face tattoos, and he's bald. And he's wearing like a button-up shirt, but it's like open, and it's got a name tag on it, but it looks like it could be just one of those shirts you buy at Hot Topic.
Like, he's just a bum.
Like, he's just a bum. And he looks at me, and he grabs the thing like before my hand can reach it. And then he grabs my debit card out of my hand too. And I just look at him like, what the hell? And like, because I don't know what the protocol is. I don't know what to do. This tattooed up ex-meth head is like grabbing my debit card from me. And I'm just thinking, huh? And I'm like, oh yeah. I'm like, so how does this work? And he's like, what type of gas do you want? And I was like, regular. And he's like, okay. And he puts my card, and he's like, debit or credit? And I'm like, debit. And he's like, put your PIN in. And so I put my PIN in. I'm like, this is all stuff I should do myself. Like, why do I have to pay you at the end of this for doing all the stuff I normally do? You're not doing anything for me.
Because some politician wanted to create jobs.
Yeah.
In the unfree market.
Yeah, I know. You know, he was a pretty nice guy. You know, we had a conversation, and I'm pretty sure he was a recovering meth addict or something, or a current meth addict. And I was just thinking, because my wife goes, you know, maybe he wouldn't have a job if there weren't this law. You know, she's not for the law. She's just wondering that maybe that's what the dumbasses, that's how they justify it. But when he was telling me his stories, I got the sense that, you know, the state screwed him over in the first place. Like, the state is the reason why he's got such a bad life, because...
Yeah, he's probably been in prison and can't get a job anywhere else because meth's illegal.
And one of his, even his hobbies, like, he loved pit bulls, right? And he had a dude, according to him, there was a dude who was trying to break into his house, and his pit bull attacked the dude. The dude sued him. And apparently the dude who was trying to break into his house was like mentally disabled in some way. And so the state put his dogs down. The state killed his guard dog because his guard dog attacked a burglar. And his landlady kicked him out because of it. So all sorts of state interventions screwed up his life, created the problem in the first place, and then says, well, here, because of this great jobs program, you can pump gas and creep people out with your face tattoos.
And make $4.50 an hour.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. I mean, I gave him a buck because I felt compelled to, but... I just felt very upset that because of the government, I can't pump my own gas, for f***'s sake.
You know, there's a variation on that kind of jobs program that's outside of the state, but it's still people who probably wouldn't do this if it weren't for the state. In San Francisco, in really shitty neighborhoods, there are like public parking lots where there's no attendant and there's a big box that has like different little box numbers in it, and you put like $5 in the little box, you know, and then the crackheads come by and like fish it out with a piece of wire, you know, so the money's never in there. And then other crackheads will come up to you, and even like one of them was wearing a tie and pretended to be a parking lot attendant. And this happens a lot there, and it happened to me a few times. This guy, he looked like a total bum, and he was wearing a tie tied really badly that he'd like found in the trash that was all dirty. And he came up and acted really official and tried to get money from me. And I was like, you don't work here. I can tell, man. You pay over there. And he's like, oh, no, I work here. This is to watch your car. And I'm like, I don't need someone to watch my car. And he's like, you need someone to watch
your
car.
Yeah, like, I'm going to break your fucking window if you don't pay me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I paid him.
Yeah, I learned my lesson about that kind of shenanigans when I was 18, and we drove to Mexico one weekend from Austin just to party. Because I was 18, we had fake IDs and whatever, but we wanted to sit in a bar and have the whole experience of being legally able to get wasted in public. And when we first crossed the border, which was our first mistake, because we learned what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to park on the American side and then walk across the border.
Right.
But
right.
We were idiots, so we drove, or I was an idiot, so I drove across the border. And a guy gets out, and he was acting all official too. And he was like, "I'll show you where you can park." So he gets in the car and he has us drive in basically a big circle. And then he's like, "Okay, that was $20." And I was like, "What? Why do I don't know what's going on here?" And I was just like, "Whatever, dude. Here's $20. Get out." But, you know.
Well, you know, these both of these guys we're talking about are people acting like the state.
Mm-hmm.
They're acting as rent seekers while providing no service with a tacit threat behind it.
And that's exactly how the state acts. So some of us, you know, especially when you're young, you're sort of conditioned to respond to that in certain ways. And that's basically what I was doing. And, you know, obviously now I'm a little bit older and wiser. I don't think I'd fall for that same thing anymore. And also now that I'm older and wiser, I recognize that that's all the state is doing. So even when I get a letter in the mail asking me to pay a traffic ticket or something, I still roll my eyes and think, "Ugh, why the do I have to do this?"
Now I'm trying to think how it would be different with the guy in San Francisco and the guy in Mexico in Libpear. I don't know about Mexico, but in San Francisco in Libpear, I'd be open carrying a gun, and I doubt someone would come up and try to gank me for my car, even though he might be carrying a gun too, but it's like we're both armed. Although he wouldn't be carrying a gun because he wouldn't be able to
Afford a gun. Or he'd have a really shitty gun that might jam on him, and you'd have a nice blingy Glock with an awesome holster.
I know. You know, somebody came out with a double-barreled 1911. Have you seen this?
Double-barreled 19. So does it have like two magazines side by side, and it can shoot out of either one? Oh, wow.
Yep. And you can... It's like a double-barreled shotgun. You can fire one... There's two triggers side by side, so you can fire two at once. MSNBC called it horrifying or shocking.
Of course they would, yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, I don't think that's shocking at all. I think that's expensive and stupid and macho. Because really, it's like a 45... I can't think of anything that one 45 bullet couldn't do that two 45s at the same time could do.
Yeah, but if you miss on that first one, you want to have more chances.
Well, no. I mean, with a 45 single stack, you have eight chances.
So it shoots each bullet at the same time? So it shoots two at once.
It can. Which I'm also thinking I think the ATF could consider it a machine gun because it fires more than one bullet on a single pull. But, you know, I wouldn't want one. First of all, 1911s are like so expensive for the normal ones. I can't imagine what this costs. And second of all, it's like if you are hit with a 45 anywhere other than your toe or your finger, you're going to die pretty much instantly.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're hit with two of those, and it's not like you can't kill two people with it. That's what MSNBC seemed to be saying. They don't know anything about guns, but I mean.
Right. They're heat seeking.
Moisture missile.
Apparently. They'll go off in different directions and hit two targets. Yeah. Right.
And it's like, you know, one 45 will kill you dead. Two 45s in the same spot at the same time.
It's just waste of ammo is all that is.
Kill you dead. Yeah. And it weighs a lot more and it's clunky and you couldn't conceal it. And it's just, I don't think it's shocking. I think it's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could see buying that like if I already had, you know, every
several
gun.
Hundred guns.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, that's a nice LARF. I'll go ahead and try that out.
Yeah. And you wanted to spend, you know, as much as a good used economy car would cost on it.
One thing I did see that was really cool, I forget who, one of our loyal listeners sent this to me on my Facebook page after we were talking about sawed-off shotguns in a thigh holster, you know, after our little argument about wearing my Mossberg 500
after
on my back.
After 20 people told you not to take a gun to California.
Well, this guy, he showed this YouTube video. Apparently somebody took it at a gun show, and there's this company, I forget what their name was, but I think they were based in Alaska, and they were selling this this shotgun. It wasn't sawed off, but the barrel was, you know, the legal length, but it didn't have a thing. It was like, it wasn't even a pistol grip. It was just like really short. It was like the whole barrel was the length of it. I mean, almost the concept of a bullpup, to where everything is so compact and built into it that it was only the length of the barrel. That was the whole length of the gun. And it was really neat looking. And I could see putting something like that in a thigh holster and carrying that around.
In a bullpup rifle, which is what a lot of Fed goons use because they're shorter but have the same accuracy and power, the action is under the barrel instead of behind the barrel.
Right, right. And I think this was the same kind of concept. I'm not sure if that's how the physics of it worked out, but the concept was that the length of the barrel was also the length of the gun. So you didn't have any extra length.
I don't know if that gun would be legal because the ATF illegally outlawed some pistol grip shotguns that were of legal barrel length last year. like just change the law, which, you know, is illegal. If you're going to play by the rules, like government agencies allege to, you should play by the rules. You know, only Congress at the federal level or a state Congress at the state level can make laws. A federal agency cannot legally make laws, but they do it all the time.
Of course, that's the statist fantasy. You know, statists always say that we're the idealists. We're the ones trying to live in a fantasy world. But I think it's fantasy and folly to think that the government will follow its own rules, because it doesn't at all.
That's my problem with constitutionalism, other than my problem of it's not a contract I signed. But even putting that horrible, horrible fact aside, if you think that the Constitution is going to save America, America has not paid attention to its Constitution since, I would say, the Whiskey Rebellion.
Since before the ink was dry, I would say.
Well, since before the Whiskey Rebellion, because the Whiskey Rebellion was a response to people not paying an unconstitutional tax.
Right, and the tax was unconstitutional.
America was constitutional for about 12 years, maybe.
Maybe that. I mean, I haven't done the research, but I'd be willing to bet that there's been other unconstitutional things in between the time it was signed and the Whiskey Rebellion. Just a hunch. I mean, I'm not speaking from any kind of knowledge here.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
So going to modern times, shifting to modern times, I said something incorrect in the last episode. You asked me, how many school shootings were there in the 60s? And I said, none, but Kent State, but it was the government shooting students.
Yeah, it was the government shooting students, yeah.
Yeah, which actually was in May of 1970, but I still consider that the 60s. The spirit of the 60s was still burning.
Right.
I mean, that was kind of like the high point of the 60s, right. Was 70, 71.
And all I remember from hearing about that was, you know, in pamphlets, I think, that the SDS probably handed out on my campus when I was in college. But you were alive when it happened? Do you remember how that was spun in the media? I mean, how do you spin that? How do you spin the government killing students on a college campus and not sound like you're...
My sisters would certainly remember it. They were in college at the time. Not that college, but different college. And that was the National Guard. The National Guard shot and killed four unarmed protesters at Kent State, Ohio. I don't remember it when it happened. I was six, but I remember the Neil Young song about it that came out a few years later, and I probably heard it a few years after that. It's called Ohio. It's like, tin soldiers and Nixon's coming.
Yeah.
We're finally on our own.
I didn't know that's what the song was
this
about.
This summer I hear the drumming. Four dead in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Four dead in Ohio. It's great, really haunting, powerful fucking song.
Yeah, I've always loved that song, but I never really made the connection that that's what it was about.
I think that you and I have really taken on the spirit of the 60s in writing protest songs. You know, I think that the stuff we wrote for the movie, the hip hop punk stuff, is the spirit of the 60s protest song.
Mixed with a little bit of Public Enemy.
Yeah. Well, Public Enemy were protest music for sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah, that whole 90s.
That scene where they do Fight the Power in, what's that movie? Spike Lee movie?
Do the Right Thing?
Yeah. That scene where they're playing Fight the Power in the street f***ing sends chills up my spine.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's so righteous in a good way and aggressive and like, wow.
Yeah.
I f***ing hate Spike Lee, but that moment in that movie, Spike Lee's a racist little gnome.
Why do you say that?
Because all his movies make white people the fucking enemy, just all of them, like cliched goons.
Yeah and maybe there's just a paradigm shift that's needed there, because he's attacking the institution, but he thinks that the institution is bad because of its inherent racism, which I think it is racist, but I think the institution itself is not the problem. I think the solution isn't to put non-racists at the helm of the state. I think it's to get rid of the helm of the state in the first place.
He also thinks that he really wants the government guns to bring justice about, but
that's fucking square as hell.
Speaking of good rap, there's a rapper called Blueprint that we like that's kind of really popular, who subscribed to our podcast updates the other day. We want to do a shout out to Blueprint.
Yeah, he seems like a cool guy, like a do-it-yourself kind of guy. Doesn't take the mainstream rap line where he tries to be like other people. He just stays true to himself, and we totally dig that. And hey, if you're listening right now, Blueprint, I'm slowly working on a hip-hop album.
Nima V, Michael Dean, we ain't got no gang, we ain't got no crew, we ain't got no posse, we got a militia. Right on the Wyoming, we ain't in the house, we in the bunker.
I'd love to have a verse from you or a beat or anything you could contribute.
Well, you know, on
awesome.
His website, he actually says he has a contact form, and he says contact for this, that, and collaborations.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I don't know if I have much money to pay you, but maybe we can work out some kind of trade where we give you some publicity to the Fiends or something.
Or have DJ do some sexy female voice for one of your records.
Yeah, there you go. So,
the lady, my wife, who does the talking at the intro and outro.
Most def. So hit me up, Blueprint. Hit me up. Or I'll hit you up. Whatever. It's all good.
So how's your record going? It seems like so far I'm your only cut creator. I've given you like four. Cut creator. Your producer. I've given you like four or five tracks to work with so far, and no one else has come through.
Yeah. I mean, I've got like a ton of beats myself, and I like a lot of them. I like the tracks you sent me. But I want to get like a nice little stable to pick from. Your friend Chris Calder says he's working on something for me, and he's got a friend of his, Kevin, I think, is supposedly working on. But I haven't gotten him yet.
Has he talked since? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, he hit me back and was like, yeah, just give me some more time. I want to make sure I get this right kind of thing. So,
well, I'll be in your stable of hoes. I think Blueprint is too popular to call one of your hoes, but you could be one of his bros.
And then there's actually a dude who I probably the only man on the street interview, or one of the very few man on the street interviews I ever did when I worked for the news, to where the guy actually said something that was like, sound. I forget what it was, but it had something to do with national politics. And he went on a rant about the Fed and money creation and how evil it was and how that needed to end and that was the main priority. And I was just like blown away that this dude in Casper, Wyoming was telling me this from a man on the street interview. You know, nobody that I knew.
There are people like that here.
Yeah, yeah. But
they're few and far between.
They were few and far between, and I was lucky to have found him. And he Facebook friended me shortly after that. And I've noticed he's been producing lately. And so I contacted him, and he mostly does dubstep now, but he says he used to do hip hop. And
I think you should also have him redo that rant and sample some chunks from it.
Oh, his rant?
About the, yeah.
Oh, that'd be so hard to find though, because K2 doesn't put all their stuff on the web.
No, you couldn't use K2's, they own it. But just have him re-record it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just take some.
That's a thought.
Some spicy bites from
it. I didn't even think of that.
You know, I heard something I really liked about Blueprint. I heard he's got a punk rock ethic. Like, he does a blog where he talks about like the struggles of being an artist and things about digital recording and just really, I mean, kind of like what we do, what I do with my blogs. I like it.
Yeah.
And I heard that he had this show in Denver that was at this place that held hundreds and hundreds of people and was sold out, but the promoter put the wrong date, put the day before on all the flyers and in the ads by accident. So like there were only like 50 people there. So he got down off the stage and stood down with the 50 people and did his show.
Oh, nice. So he was like among them.
Mm-hmm. I did something like that once back in the 80s when I was in this punk band called the Beef People. We were booked into this club in Charlottesville, Virginia called Trax that holds like 800 people. And there were like 50 people there. And it was a huge stage. It was a country and western bar most nights. And we just invited everyone up on the stage and played on the stage. Nice. And we also, we had a pair of dog clippers there. And we gave 25 cent haircuts, money back guarantee. And we shaved a bunch of people's heads while we, the singer did while we were playing. And he shaved my head while I was playing guitar. And I was getting shocked while he was doing it. It was pretty cool.
You're getting shocked? Like what? Like
on my head. Like on my head.
Oh, okay.
Every time he touched it because I was playing guitar.
Static electricity.
No, electric electricity.
Oh.
Like, it probably could have killed me, but it was fun.
All right. I guess that does sound fun in a punk rock kind of way.
So, pigeon-guided missiles we talked about last time. One thing I left out was the fact that the pigeon-guided missile system was developed by B.F. Skinner. You know who he is?
But Skinner? No, I don't know who he is.
Well, he's who Seymour Skinner is named after on The Simpsons, the principal. B.F. Skinner was a behavioral psychologist who's best known for the Skinner box, which is a box he built and raised his daughter in and had no physical contact with her. And
oh, God, that's disgusting.
I mean, there's more details to it than that. It's not as cut and dry as that. But
yeah, that horrifies me. How did...
Yep. Now, B.F. Skinner heavily influenced American education.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Putting a kid in a box for 18 years, that's about public schooling, isn't it?
He was a consultant on the development of American schools in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
So is this the study whenever people say things like, you know, if there's no human contact, then people become violent and not as smart? Is that where these... What were the conclusions of his study?
I honestly don't know. I just know the bullet points of it, but... A lot of people consider him a bad man because of what he did to his daughter.
Yeah,
you know, he used her as a lab rat.
Yeah. Man, I don't even know what to say about that. I did not know about that, but that is completely disgusting and horrible. And what are the implications of that? I mean, what do you think would happen to somebody like that in lip pair? First of all, do you think that that would happen? I mean, I guess it could.
And well, first of all, in lip pair, I think it'd be a lot easier to emancipate yourself at a young age.
Right.
You know, there's an interesting take on that that I really like is in this book by Claire Wolfe, one of our heroes and someone who likes us a lot, OG libertarian lady who's written OG libertarian fiction for about 25 years. Her latest book, God, I can't remember what it's called, like Tales from Hardyville, I think. Basically, in that book and in her world, you are an adult as soon as you move out of the house and can support yourself.
Yeah.
That's the legal definition in that world.
That sounds about right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in a situation like that where she didn't have the ability, like she was literally being forced to stay in a cage. I mean, I guess morally the guy was applying force. He was aggressing against her because he would not allow her to leave the cage.
Well, first of all, I don't know if you could keep it from happening, but I think in lip pair, when she got out of the cage, she could probably sue him in a private court and win.
Right. And if any of his neighbors or business
somebody
associates,
would know about it.
When they found out, they would ostracize him.
You know, he was doing it for the purpose of writing scientific papers on it and books on it. So it wasn't hidden forever.
And I'm wondering too, was he possibly getting funding from a university or some other kind of state-funded institution? In which case the government would have been enabling it as well.
Well, I don't know about that. I can't check online right now because I'm recording on this computer, but he certainly got funding later when he was consulting on American education.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, speaking of weird statists, Aldous Huxley, our hero, we're a fan of his, who wrote Brave New World. He had a brother named Julian Huxley, who was a brilliant statist who wrote a lot of seminal texts on natural selection. But he was also really into central planning. He was a consultant for the UN, the World Wildlife Foundation, and he was very into eugenics.
Very into eugenics. Yeah, yeah, I could see that. So was Aldous sort of inspired by this kind of eugenics in his brother, in his writing of Brave New World?
I don't know what their relationship was, but he did have a brother named Julian Huxley, who was a weirdo, brilliant statist.
FreedomFiends.com, 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 FreedomFiends, FreedomFiends, FreedomFiends.
Fiends. Freedom Fiends. FreedomFiends.com. 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 Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends.
So, Nima Vidati.
What it do, Michael Dub Dean?
I just got the Casper Journal, the Prairie Pravda.
The Prairie Pravda. What the f*** they saying?
Front banner headline. Casper Journal poll shows that most support smoking ban.
Okay, who gives a f***?
Majority think issue belongs on election ballot. First of all, belongs on election ballot. So, like, democracy is 51%, tyrannizing 49%.
Yeah.
Secondly, there was another independent poll that said most people in Casper are against a smoking ban, but the Casper Journal did a poll and it says most are for it. And remember, the guy who runs the Prairie Pravda, isn't he on the committee, the board of the Wyoming Meth Project? So he's a nanny dude.
Yeah, yeah.
He's also anti-gun.
Right. So, I mean, how trustable is a poll like that? And even if it were, even if there were a majority of people in Casper who wanted to ban smoking, what gives them the right? Absolutely nothing.
Right. And the city council is getting inundated with pre-printed postcards that people are sending in saying they're in favor of a smoking ban because the American Lung Association, in conjunction with some, you know, Wyoming Meth Project type anti-smoking org called Smoke Free Natrona, who I wrote them a letter and told them they were Nazis.
They are Nazis.
They did not write back. Well, I also said, and Hitler was into smoking bans because he thought he owned people's bodies. They sent out a bunch of postcards to everyone in town that were pre-addressed and stamped, postage paid, directed to the city council.
Uh-huh.
But there's no opposing organization doing it. And interesting, Smoke Free Natrona has an Alexa ranking of nothing. They're no rank, which means like no one's looking at their website, but they've got funding to send out four color prepaid postcards to everyone in town.
So where are they getting the funding is the question.
I don't know.
Either some nanny stater is paying them or, I mean, that's what I would imagine. They're all donating their money to oppress people.
I don't know. There's some billionaire family in town. I don't know if they're involved with this, but they own like this huge house that I've seen. It's like amazingly huge. And it's on like Lucky Street, which is a street they own, or Luck Street.
Right.
And they're involved in all sorts of kind of nanny funding things. And they got all their money from having a monopoly on building all the roads in the state.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, when I hear this, all I can think of is Kale Case when he said that great statement about why the hell would we make anything illegal that you can just walk away to avoid?
Yeah.
If you can walk away, then that's the solution. Just walk away.
He said, I don't like smoking, Kenny G, or patchouli, but I support the right of anyone to have that junk or any business owner to allow it. Government shouldn't be involved in anything that people can avoid by walking out the door.
Yeah, yeah. Just walk away.
When I first heard that, I was like, that is so f***ing wonderful. And for a politician, I guess it is. But Mama Liberty's answer to that in the movie, you know, I had that quote in the movie with a picture of Kale in my living room holding my revolver. And he's a state rep here, has been for decades, I think.
Yeah.
He's pretty much the most libertarian state rep there is. I call him the Ron Paul of Wyoming, yep. Which he's not quite. He's a little more statist than Ron Paul, but he's in a good direction. I like him.
Yeah.
But then Mama Liberty's answer to that statement was, government doesn't allow us to walk out of anything.
But they should. That's the thing.
Well, government could be legitimate if it were voluntary to be involved with it. That's what panarchy is. You choose your own level of government and you'd pay for it.
Right, right. But inherently, that's not the way government works as it's conceived these days. It operates on the basic premise that it is the monopoly force, that it is the monopoly of force, and that it'll do anything to prevent competing systems of voluntary interactions. That's why they feel they can control everything down to whether or not somebody lights up some tobacco inside your privately owned bar. And
right.
And really, I don't see how people don't see logically how forcing somebody who owns a bar and it's their private property, forcing them to not allow smokers and to kick smokers out. How is that any different from saying you can't smoke in your home?
Well, that's it's a slippery slope. And
I don't even think it's a slippery slope. I think it's the same concept. It's the same principle.
There's a town in California that's banned smoking in your home in certain situations. If you share a common wall with someone else, like in an apartment building, like you wouldn't be able to smoke in that town. It's Calabasas, California.
Ugh.
Which is one town over from where DJ and I lived in Agoura, California.
Yeah. So lucky y'all for getting the fuck out of there.
Yep. Calabasas is really incredibly nanny and white and rich. I only say white because I think there's one black resident there and it's Cat Williams. And he always jokes about
he's the only black guy.
He goes to his golf course that he's a member of and like people call the cops.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, he probably dresses as a pimp named Slickback, and so maybe somebody's selling hoes over in them regions.
Yeah. So, speaking of government force, Kony, not to be confused with Kofi, who's a good guy from Africa. Kony is a really bad guy from Africa, and he's really hip, suddenly. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, apparently there's been this viral video going around called Kony 2012.
It sounds like he's running for office.
It does, doesn't it? And I haven't seen it, so, you know, I try to keep...
I've seen part of it.
Have you? I mean, what is it? Is it really slick and flashy and pulling on your heartstrings?
I mean, it's slicker than our film production, but, you know, we had a budget of $2,000, and I think this guy had a budget of about $200,000 for a 30-minute movie. We spent $2,000 making a 90-minute movie.
Right.
But I imagine his budget's probably a lot higher than that because the nonprofit that he works for pays him $95,000 a year plus benefits plus travel.
Right,
expenses.
And apparently a few of the bigwigs in that organization have ties with the State Department, and not just Hillary Clinton, but before that, Condoleezza Rice as well. So there's been a lot of talk and speculation that this is sort of a push on the parts of the State Department, and some people even say the CIA, to use this as a justification to expand control over Africa. I mean, there's been that thing called AFRICOM, which is basically the American Army or the American State's African Command. And so this is sort of saying, hey, look, there's this boogeyman, there's this devil we call Kony. We need you to support us sending troops here.
He is a bad guy. I mean, he's a warlord that's been operating in a region of Uganda for a couple decades and, you know, kidnaps 12-year-old boys and forces them to be soldiers and kidnaps 10-year-old girls and forces them to be sex slaves deep in the jungle. He's a bad guy. But, you know, first of all, there's all sorts of horrible shit going on in the world that no one's paying attention to because there's not a cool video about it. I mean, stuff like that happens in Mexico constantly, right next door. Also, you know, the United States government and a lot of governments do stuff worse than that. I mean, I would say the war on drugs is worse than that.
I would say the war on drugs is worse than that. The occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq is worse than that. I mean, the American soldier who shot 16 innocent people in the last week.
Oh, my God. Holy hell, that depressed me so much, man.
It depressed the hell out of me too. I mean, he went into people's homes and shot them while they were asleep and then burned their bodies.
And kids and, you know, women, children, men.
Kids and women. Yeah, the majority of them were kids and women. Obviously, the American government has no moral problem with violence like this. What they're trying to do is they're playing an angle here. They want to get more of a footprint in Africa so they can block the Chinese from getting African oil and so they can control more of those resources.
And Obama has sent 100 special forces in to help find and eliminate Kony, allegedly. You know, which is kind of interesting. It's kind of a military action supposedly inspired by a viral video. But I think it's the other way around. I think this video was funded and created by the State Department. And then there's actually some talk that Kony is CIA funded, too. But regardless of all that...
Kony the evil guy or Kony the video?
Well, both. Kony the video is probably funded by people in the government or people who work for the government, at least. And Kony the guy may be funded by the U.S. government. That's what Alex Jones says. I don't know what his source is, but Alex Jones also says that Angelina Jolie should be tried for war crimes in an international tribunal.
Alex Jones says a lot of things. He's the Cartman of alternative radio.
I like him though, but
I like him when I like him. That's how I feel about Alex Jones.
He was Garrett's gateway drug to liberty. That's what he says.
Yeah.
You know, he gets it about half right. He gets it more right than MSNBC, even though he gets it wrong a lot of the time.
That's true.
More right
than
Fox.
Noam Chomsky was my gateway drug, and there are a lot of things I disagree with him on, but his critique of American foreign policy was what sort of brought me over to the, hey, maybe the government is evil.
You know, my feeling about Noam Chomsky fans, and he's a left anarchist, I guess, or a left libertarian, which I don't even know what that is.
He doesn't believe in anarchy. He's tried to refute anarchy multiple times, failing in my eyes, but obviously his followers buy it.
Well, in that show, Peep Show, which you still need to see, there's this character who's kind of an uneducated bedroom DJ hipster dude who crashes this party that's like a college professor and his brightest students sitting around talking, and the hipster dude's making fun of the professor and saying, well, you've got all these books and you think you're smart, but you're really not, because blah, 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 blah. And the professor interrupts him and says, oh, is that what you learned from Noam Chomsky and Mr. Michael Moore? like that's the education for stupid people, is Noam Chomsky and Michael Moore.
See, when I read Noam Chomsky, he really takes American foreign policy to task hardcore. I mean, his critique of foreign policy would be very apt on antiwar.com, and it reminds me of people like Justin Raimondo and things like that, at least his earlier stuff, like The Culture of Terrorism, when he talks about American involvement in Central America and the drug war and how basically we were just funding violence for our own, sorry, not us,
thank you,
but the government was funding violence for its own ends, things like that. And so I really agree with his critique on a lot of things, but I don't agree with his solutions, which are obviously, his thing is we need more democracy, which obviously I don't buy into. But his critique, at least that part of it, and his diagnosis of some of the things in his critique, I can buy. But I think we got off the subject here. We're still supposed to be talking about Kony.
Yeah. What's the country in Africa where the Jadaween or the...
Jadaween? That sounds like Star Wars to me. I don't know what you're talking
about. No. It's the other country that Angelina Jolie was flipping out about a few years ago. The one where people are being murdered wholesale.
Darfur.
Darfur. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, Darfur in Africa has heinous local warlords, the Jadaween, going around murdering women and children and men. And the thing is, you know, they're scary as f*** too. They're like ancient Muslim desert soldiers on horses with AK-47s and sword, and they chop heads off the swords. I mean, they really medieval looking in the way they dress and the way, and they're on horses. And but part of the reason that they were able to be so effective is because the UN went in and disarmed Darfur. And Darfur doesn't have any oil, so the US doesn't give a shit and hasn't done anything. Uganda has tons of oil, which a lot of people think, and I think, is why the US is interested in establishing a presence there.
See, that's the thing. Parts of Sudan do have oil, South Sudan, and recently they broke away, and that was very much supported by the United States government, because South Sudan does have oil. Uganda has oil, and so does Congo. And if you remember, we talked about it on the cast quite a few months ago, maybe 6 months ago, when AFRICOM was sort of getting its boots on the ground, literally, in Africa. Obama sent a few thousand, you know, advisors, quote unquote, and special forces to Congo to help with...
Advisors with guns.
Advisors with... Yeah, exactly. And so there's been a big move, you know, in American foreign policy to sort of position themselves in Africa to have more influence and take more control. And now, obviously, the African countries, at least the people in the African countries, aren't really into this. And people in America didn't really understand it. So I think this whole Kony thing is nothing more than a PR move.
There's a really, really good video. If you search some of the replies to Kony 2012, there's one that's a Ugandan American girl. Parents are both born in Uganda. They live in America. She was born and raised in America, like a westernized Uganda girl who's probably about 17 or 18, replying to that and just tearing it apart, really, just saying that this is crazy and silly, and you know, and this guy's been doing it for 20 years and a lot of people thought he was dead, and it's kind of saying it's not as big of a deal as people are making of it.
All it is a narrative. It's a narrative just like the narrative that Iraq had weapons of mass destructions and were involved in 9/11. It's nothing but a narrative that they're going to use to try to get voters to support more action, to try to get people to believe that sending their kids and their money over to this region of the world is a good thing, when it's really not. It's not good for anybody but the pocketbooks of the politically connected.
I'm done with that, unless you got more.
No, I want to crumble that up and throw it away. And one thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, What has TV been saying about this? Because I don't really watch TV.
I've stopped watching. I only watch movies on Netflix now.
See, because I heard there was a lot of critiques on this, but they were sort of critiquing the wrong things. Like, they were talking about, you know, the guy has a big salary who made this, and who's he funded by, and not necessarily getting to the root, you know, why would somebody be pushing this? Is this a foreign policy kind of thing? I hear there was a lot of blowback for Coney, but I'm not really sure what the mainstream blowback was.
It's probably helping Coney in some way.
Maybe.
I don't know how, but it just seems like this kind of thing would somehow like have unintended consequences.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Speaking of unintended consequences, do you know about the Blue Helmet rapes?
No.
Well, it was a few years back. There was a bunch of UN peacekeepers raped some women.
Really?
Allegedly.
There's a running joke that, it's a fact that a lot of UN peacekeepers don't carry rifles. They only carry sidearms because they don't want to look like soldiers. Although they do have blue-headed dragoons with rifles. But, somebody made a joke that they don't carry rifles. They only carry sidearms because it makes it easier to rape somebody. You don't have to carry a rifle.
That's disgusting. Because isn't that just... Doesn't that sum up the UN? I mean, in my opinion.
I'm actually finding it on the UN website.
Speaking of peacekeepers in the UN, the Hunger Games movie is coming out soon, and I'm excited about that. I know you told me you weren't interested in reading more books because you want to spend your time lately watching visual media, but the evil police from the Empire in that book.
That is visual media.
It is now, but before it was a book. In the book, I don't know if it's going to do it like this in the movie, but the evil police, the enforcers of the police state in that book are called peacekeepers. And I'm wondering if that's a nod to the UN being evil.
Okay, I'm looking at a Huffington Post article called Uruguay. Is that how you say it?
Uruguay? I don't know. Homer on The Simpsons always called it Uruguay.
Uruguay. Uruguay. Uruguay apologizes over alleged rape by UN peacekeepers.
Ah.
Wait, so people in Uruguay got raped and had to apologize? That sounds right. That sounds like the UN. Yeah. Alleged rape of an 18-year-old Haitian man by Uruguayan UN peacekeeping troops in the poor Caribbean state. Haiti.
Ugh.
Wow.
Yeah, so the UN feigns to come into the country and help people out who've just been devastated and ends up raping them.
Yeah, and the UN allegedly also caused an outbreak of E. coli in Haiti because the UN's toilets were
allegedly
emptying into the local river people get water from.
That's disgusting. Yeah, the UN, it's just a government jobs program. And in fact, it's more than that.
It's more than that, man. It's a fucking take over the world program. It really is.
But that's what it is at best. At best, when they send their blue, quote unquote, peacekeepers to help you after the earthquake. I mean, they're worse than FEMA. They're just a government jobs program that mucks up the thing. And then apparently rapes you.
Yeah, and you know, decides what land belongs to what people. Like, they created Israel out of Palestine, and you know, the UN, the UK, and the US threw a bunch of Palestinians into camps, bulldozed their houses, and made Israel. And there are people who'd call me anti-Semitic for saying that, but it's history, it's fact. It's not anti-Semitic, it's fact.
It's fact, yeah, know? Exactly. And I don't necessarily want to get into that whole hornet's nest right now, but I will say that I don't understand how people, especially liberals, can think that the UN can be any kind of force for good.
Well, I'll get into a hornet's nest. I'm just amazed how, like, culture, predominant culture in different regions paints one group as heroes or ethical and one group as wrong. If you send money to Palestine, you're going to get on a government list. If you send money to Israel, you're just doing what the government's already doing with their stolen money anyway. A really good example, let's get out of the Israel one for a minute, is I read a lot of gun magazines. Whenever we go to Walmart, I grab a gun magazine and read it.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of articles in, you know, Fed Goon Monthly kind of magazines.
Fed Goon Monthly.
Mall Ninja Quarterly. There's several well-known writers who write high-profile articles for those magazines that are former Spetsnaz, the Russian Special Forces, Spetsnaz. And a lot of the articles are about combat techniques when they were fighting Afghanistan, when Russia was fighting Afghanistan. And it's like, those people weren't ethical. They were in there invading a foreign nation on its soil. You know, you'll never see something written by a former Mouge in an American gun magazine.
Right. Yeah, that's true. You know? That's true.
And the Mouge were fighting in self-defense.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Because America picks the winners and losers and puts it in the newspaper and everyone just parrots it like, rah.
But with all the hype about Russia being the bad guy now that Putin's been elected, and even before then, you know, there was always the Cold Warriors who wished that we were still in a Cold War. Like when there was the spat between Russia and Georgia a few years back, that became a big thing again with the establishment, talking about how Russia was the big bad guy. So why did they let the Russian ex-Spetsnaz people talk? Are they now Americans? Did they like renounce their Russianness?
Well, I don't know. I think they could still be Russian. I mean, I don't think much has changed in the past week with Russia. They're still not, it's not the Cold War anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Russia's just another European country to America.
The thing about Russia is the government, ever since the Cold War ended, instead of backing off from encircling Russia, they upped their game. I mean, with the whole missile defense system in Poland that they say was to protect Western Europe against Iranian nukes that they don't have, and Iran's longest missile range could maybe hit Israel and not very accurately. Nobody bought that the missile defense was actually to defend Germany against Iran. I mean, everybody knew that it was pointed at Russia.
Well, yeah. I'll say a good thing about Russia is that someone in the Russian Federation downloaded the ISO of the DVD of our whole movie on BitTorrent yesterday.
When we talk about countries, we're talking about the state there. We're talking about the governments, not the people.
Not the people. Yeah. I hope whoever downloaded it bootlegs the fuck out of it, sells it for 20 rubles on a blanket in front of the U.S. Army base.
Hell yeah.
Like that kid in the Hurt Locker.
The Hurt Locker. All right. Yeah, that kid was my favorite character.
Tyranny in your neck of the woods got you yowling? Tell the Freedom Fiends about it at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
So, Palestine.
Yeah, I want to get back to that thing you were saying about how in our culture, and in every culture, you know, there's certain groups are allowed to do things. And when other groups do things, it's like, well, what the f***? And when we were talking about Israel and Palestine, recently Israel has resumed airstrikes on Gaza, and something like at least 21 Palestinians have been killed, maybe more than that. Dozens have been wounded. And in retaliation, militant groups have been launching rockets back into Israel. I think maybe 4 Israelis were injured. And it's been a big deal. Like, apparently Obama had a speech or made a statement about it where he says, you know, he calls on the Palestinian militants to stop attacking Israel, and he calls on both sides to resume talks.
That's like if a mugger is shooting at you and you shoot back, someone calling on you to stop shooting back.
Yeah, yeah. Or like in the American police state, when you try to pull away from the cop who's grabbing you to throw you to the ground and he says you're resisting and then tases you.
Yep.
We don't have this concept anymore. Or I don't know if we ever did, to where I think some people have called it derogatorily, at least on Facebook, the quote-unquote moral equivalency argument. Like, these people are subhumans, so you can't say that they're acting in self-defense because they're the bad guys and they started it. And it's this whole circular logic thing that since the Palestinians are dirty and don't believe Israel has the right to subjugate them, then they're the aggressors.
Well, I think that Israel kind of proved they believe that at one point, because didn't they recently trade like 300 Muslim prisoners for one Israeli prisoner?
Something like that. I think that was a few months back.
It's like American blacks in the early
the
America after
right.
Three-fifths of a person. Right. I guess to Israelis, a Muslim is 1/300th of a person.
Right. Well, somebody, I forget who it was, recently wrote an article. It was basically, I don't know if it was a fantasy piece, but it was sort of a solution other than the two-state solution. People always talk about, well, maybe there needs to be this two-state solution.
First of all, define two-state solution.
Well, people say, you know, the Palestinians should get their own state. Them and Israel should work it out, and the Palestinians should have their own government, their own territory, and basically not live in this apartheid state where Israelis control everything and they're under behind fences and things like that.
Israel has turned the Palestinians into what the Israelis were for thousands of years, like wandering the desert without a home.
Literally, yeah, and it's really disgusting. I mean, they basically live in the equivalent of the ghettos from back in when Germany had the Jews cordoned off. I mean,
it's Indian reservations.
Indian reservations. Yeah, like we said, I think we said that in the first podcast we ever did before it was an actual podcast. You just recorded me once and we were bullshitting in your living room. But this guy, he wrote this article or this paper where he was saying maybe there needs to be, you know, sort of a no state solution, or maybe panarchy is the answer. Maybe not really have a border, but have people sign up for whatever services they want, and it'll be like a club. And you don't need to have an actual government. So if such and such Palestinians and such Israelis want to sign up for a certain water service, they can do it. If not, then they don't have to.
People don't need a lot of services. I would be really happy if the state went away and I could personally pay for power, garbage collection, get food, get water. That's about it. I think the free market would take care of everything. I mean, the free market would take care of that. And again, we've said that saying the free market is a cop-out. People would step up to provide services at competitive prices without putting a gun to your head.
There you go. And to me, that is the free market. But I think that what I mentioned in the few casts ago is when you say things like the free market will sort it out, liberals and statists think, oh, well, that's just nonsense. You're just putting faith in blah, blah, blah. But if you say that, you know, somebody would take care of that problem, I think that's very true. Why wouldn't somebody take care of the problem?
Yeah. And if people think that the state, meaning your federal and state and local government, don't want to let you secede or not have a state and do things peacefully on your own, the UN is even worse. I mean, the UN, remember, they said that no new countries can form without their permission. They said that no country can be below water. They said that countries have to be the X number of feet above water. I mean, basically, the UN is a bunch of really, really, really crazy control freaks playing Risk with the actual world, playing a giant board game with the actual world.
Literally. And how far removed are they from you? And that's the point I want to make to liberals who might think that, you know, well, the Americans should listen to the UN and we shouldn't do things without the UN's approval. And the UN is the supreme, you know, and they play mock UN in high school and things like that. The UN, can I write my representative at the UN? Who the hell even is my representative at the UN? I don't have one. The UN does not represent me at all. And they never would.
Billionaire industrialists write their rep at the UN. America has a rep at the UN. I mean, they have a whole cadre of offices of backup people and people writing policy to be turned into law.
Yeah. And it's always some evil statist that I would never agree to speak for my behalf anyway, like John Bolton. Why the hell does John Bolton tell the UN what the hell is best for me? I don't want the UN to know what's best for me, and I don't think John Bolton is smarter than a legion on my pubis. So
the people who can actually write their reps at the UN and get the UN to change its course don't write them. They sit down with them on Whore Island and drink virgins, drink the blood of virgins and talk about it.
Yeah, and then Alex Jones makes a movie about it.
Yeah.
All right, so basically that's all summed up in, hey, UN, you're so square. Fuck you.
Fuck you. I was at an NA meeting one time and was really pissed at what the speaker was saying too. But didn't like what the speaker was saying, and like the speaker had like implied something about him, mm-hmm. you know, without saying his name, like dissed him from the pulpit kind of. Mm-hmm. Stood up in this meeting with like 80 people in it in a church basement. He's like 6'7" and really lanky, and he was wearing like a trench coat, and he just kind of like put his bony hand out with his finger out and said, well, fuck you, and walked out of the meeting.
Nice. Speaking of churches, there's a great website that you showed me called God Hates Shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
Wonderful, sarcastic take on people using Leviticus to judge other people. Because
for being homosexual.
Yeah, for being homosexual. And just whatever. I mean, people have different Leviticus
because Leviticus also bans eating shrimp and any shellfish, wearing mixed fiber clothes, getting a tattoo, and about 200 other things.
Yeah.
Mixing different foods. You know, like, it basically, it's part of what outlines kosher, the food requirements.
From my understanding, yeah. And God Hates Shrimp goes to show, and it makes the point really well using sarcasm, that the Book of Leviticus is not a good place to look at for modern rules of society. At all. At best, I think the Book of Leviticus is something to look at and say, huh, that's really weird. The first paragraph of this whole website is just great. It says, shrimp, crab, lobsters, clams, mussels, all these are an abomination before the Lord, just as gays are an abomination. Why stop at protesting gay marriage? Bring all of God's laws unto the heathens and the sodomites. We call upon all Christians to join the crusade against Long John Silver's and Red Lobster. Yeah, even Popeye shall be cleansed.
Yeah, although we talked last week about how Jesus' new covenant undid all of the Leviticus stuff, but actually there is some stuff of Jesus tacitly condemning homosexuality in the New Testament, but it's not as cut and dry and it's open to interpretation more.
What does he say?
Oh, it's long.
See, because what I heard somebody refute that, saying that it was only in one of the books. I forget which book, maybe Mark.
Oh, yeah, because there's four different Gospels, and who knows if they're all...
Right, and somebody was saying maybe Mark just sort of put those words in Jesus' mouth.
Because one of his friends was hitting on him and was creeping him out.
maybe. Who knows? I just know that... Don't judge people, man. I mean...
Well, it's in Matthew... And I don't even see this as condemning homosexuality so much as celebrating heterosexuality. He says, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.'" That doesn't sound like it's condemning homosexuality. It sounds like it's celebrating heterosexuality, which is not the same thing.
Yeah, it just sounds like it's celebrating marriage. So, I mean, if you took that to its stupid roots and got retarded with it, you could say that, you know, if you don't get married in your whole life, then you're a sinner. In which case, priests would be sinners.
One of my favorite lines in a Nick Cave song, Nick Cave's one of my favorite singers. He's singing this, it's this really sexy, slow song about a woman. And one line in it is, "She lay open like a book," which I really like. And another line in it is, and he says it, I can't even approximate the creepy kind of beautiful, deep, sexual, creepy voice he says it in, but it's like, "She looks like she just stepped out of the book of Leviticus."
Like she's forbidden.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dig it.
That's what Paul Bonneau said, was it sounded like the words we were looking for when we were talking about gun-proofing kids is, don't make guns seem like forbidden fruit. And I think that's a good saying. That's better than how we said it.
Well, that's interesting. Did Leviticus ever talk about weapons?
There's some stuff about weapons in the Bible, Old and New Testament. Jesus says, "Sell your coat to buy a sword," when going to testify.
Yeah, which is obviously in favor of being able to defend yourself.
Sell your most important possession and buy a sidearm is what he's saying.
Yeah.
You know, because to sell your coat, if you're going across the desert at night, you could freeze to death. So he's saying that having self-defense is more important than being able to protect yourself from the elements.
Or as you put it, to modernize it, if you own a flat screen TV but not an AK, your priorities are a bit wrong.
That was Boston said that. I was quoting him. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Did you ever go to South by Southwest in Austin? You know what it is?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. That's a huge thing. I lived in Austin for 6 years. Yeah, I went to South by a few times. Yeah.
You know, it's a big music festival. Now it's a music and film festival. They had an internet conference at South by Southwest recently, and Al Gore spoke. He was the star speaker.
Why? Why would you? That is like the coolest music festival. Why would you let the uncoolest person in the world talk at it?
Because he said he invented the internet once.
Yeah.
He urged young folk to use the internet to improve government.
Okay, I think that's what we're doing, Michael. We're improving it by deleting it.
No, we're just using it to improve it by hating on it. I think that really the people who are improving government with the internet are Anonymous.
There you go. Yeah.
Anonymous and Julian Assange are improving government with the internet.
Right, we're just cheerleading for them.
It says, Gore talked of a wiki democracy of digital flash mobs calling out the truth, a government square that holds people accountable. Square being the operative word.
Square being the operative word, right. Yeah.
Not as in the town square, yeah. But as in the town is square.
So he's trying to co-opt our whole image of how the internet's going to create the anarchy that organizes the world. He thinks the internet's going to improve democracy and keep organizing the world. Trying to co-opt freedom into statism is a well-tried and true tactic that the state always tries to use.
It takes a village to censor the internet.
Yeah, actually, it takes a few... But I don't think they'll be able to. I think the internet is beyond the reach of the state at this point.
Yeah.
No matter how hard they try, even though they're apparently throwing people in jail, like the Mega Upload guy, and then what was that other? There was some other website creator that was recently taken down by the feds. I think this is another example of the dinosaur thrashing in the tar pit, or the T-1000 thrashing in the molten steel.
Yeah.
They're trying hard right now to lash out against the people who are going to end up being their demise. I think a few people are going to end up getting screwed by it, but the optimism I see in it is that eventually they're going to lose, and they know that, and that's why they're scared, and that's why they're doing things like this.
They're so square.
They're scared squares, man.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfeens.com.
So there's a big catch-22 in that Ohio stash box bill we talked about, where they're going to make it illegal to have a hidden compartment.
A catch-22 in the sense that you're damned no matter what the f*** you do?
Yes. Ohio law also requires that if you are transporting a weapon, it has to be in a locked box built into your car.
Oh, sh**. So you can't have a gun unless it's in a secret compartment, and you can't have a secret compartment. So by proxy, they don't want you to have a gun.
Well, I think that that's an unintended consequence that they'll like about this, but...
Is it really unintended, do you think, or do you think
I think it is unintended. I think that really they just came up with, we have to stop drugs, so we're going to make it harder legally to have a box. But, and you know, I forgot to mention when I was talking about that article on how to prevent drug dogs from sniffing out your drugs, not only keep them up high instead of down low, but it also recommended having them in Tupperware inside another Tupperware.
Double bag it.
Not double bag it. Bag it and then double box it in sealed Tupperware is what they said. Right. I'm just repeating what I read. So Bad Quaker spent a half hour analyzing something that you said in passing that I really liked. I love him. He's great. And he's so meticulous and logical, and we try to be meticulous and logical, but I think we, and especially me, sometimes instead of going through the mind, like my mind works too quickly and jumps around too much to where I just end up, instead of logically dismissing statists, I'm more likely to just say, well, fuck you, you're square.
Yeah Well, see, that's the thing, is Bad Quaker, he'll spend a good 20-30 minutes even on one topic, and he'll just go through all the ins and outs. We sort of do a brief survey of everything. I feel like we're more like a mosh pit, like we run into every statist piece of shit and smash him with our shoulder, whereas Bad Quaker, he's more of like a boxing match or a Greco-Roman wrestling.
No, he's more like we're walking around punching statists in the face, and he has one of them in an interrogation room for 186 hours.
Ah, that's it. Yeah, although he would never waterboard them.
He would never do that. But you know, I'm saying, like, if you want to use that analogy, we're running around the mosh pit elbowing statists in the nose, taking out 40 or 50 of them in an hour, and he has one of them in interrogation. Yeah. For 90 yeah. minutes.
Yeah. Which makes sense, because we're the younger dudes. He's sort of the old folding his arms, looking at you like, really? Yep. Is that what you think?
You know, he does a podcast every day. He's retired. He does a podcast almost every day.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I mean, he's one of the more prolific ones. He's always got a... In my iPod, every time I refresh, I can always count on a Bad Quaker to be there in my iPod when I go to listen.
So what do you think of the new Vaporsmiths products? I'm loving these batteries, man. They feel like a rifle shell, and they last like four times longer. The Vigo.
They last so long.
Vigo.
What's it called?
Vigo.
Oh.
V, capital G, small O.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't had to charge mine yet. They came to me charged about a week ago, and I've been puffing on them nonstop, and I haven't had to put them on a charger.
Did you get any of the new flavors? Coffee, minty mint, or cherry?
I did. Well, is cherry a new flavor? Cherry's been around for a while.
Oh, no, it's not. Okay. No, right.
Yeah, I got minty mint, and I got a coffee. I really like the coffee.
I love the coffee.
And I like the minty mint. I can't decide if I like it better than the original menthol yet, though. It's very strong.
It's really strong.
I feel like I like it a lot for maybe an hour or two, but I don't know if it's going to be my all day vape.
It's kind of fun to have the minty mint with your morning coffee and then have the coffee later, the coffee flavored later.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I've got a friend here at my work who I've recently turned on to Vaporsmiths, and he says he loves the coffee. And I think I might trade him a few of my coffees for some of his extra strength reds, because he indicated that the extra strength was a little too strong for him.
Cool.
But yeah, I always dig all of the Vaporsmiths product, and I want to keep them coming. I do have a question, though. There seems, on these new big batteries, there seems to be another line of threads. Is he coming out with maybe
That's for the charger. That's for the charger that's shipping. In the meantime, do you have any of the little tiny chargers that go in the USB port?
Yeah.
Not the one that are USB'd into the one that plugs in the wall, but the ones that are just USB only?
The only USB ones I have plug into both. They plug into the charger that plugs into the wall and the...
Okay.
Because the input on the charger that plugs into the wall is USB, so you could plug any charger into it.
There's two different size... I know, but there's a different USB one that doesn't come with the wall charger that fit these. But he's actually mailing us and everyone out the charger for these today.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you very much, Vaporsmiths.
Yep.
And to all you fiends, if you like nicotine, go ahead and give this a try, because I've loved him ever since. And, you know, in our commercial, we say it brings nicotine consumption into the 21st century, but we don't give a real reason why. And I think the real reason why is it's just so much cleaner and so much more usable. I can literally keep this in my mouth all day,
yep,
like I used to do with my tobacco pipe, but I don't have to worry about people being square about it.
Yep. Speaking of square, Ron Paul got his first win in the Virgin Islands, but all the news agencies still reported Romney.
See, and that's the thing, man. I guess he just can't win. Even when he wins, he can't win.
The Virgin Islands is populated by, like, expatriate American billionaires who, well, not expatriate, it's America, but, you know, it's the playground for people that want to go snort coke off a supermodel's breast, so of course they'd want Ron Paul.
Yeah, of course they do. But I don't even know how I feel about the way the Paul campaign is being treated anymore. I feel like the establishment has put their foot down and said, hey, this guy's not going to get any kind of traction. I hope the takeaway from people is, well, hey, establishment, you're not going to get any kind of traction. We're not going to vote for whoever you end up putting up, and we're just not going to participate anymore.
Well, there's an interesting thing strategically, which is that the GOP, a lot of people high up in the GOP are now pressuring Newt to drop out, because they said there's just too many people and it's confusing people. But Newt's votes are a little bit higher than Ron Paul's in the official counting. I mean, I think that there might be, I and Ron Paul think there might be some kind of monkey business going on. But in the official, it's like, it's interesting that the GOP is not asking Ron Paul to step down. First of all, they know he won't.
Yeah.
But second of all, I think that if they're going to have somebody out, you know, they basically think it's going to be Santorum or Romney, and the other two are dead weight on their campaign. But they don't want to ask Ron Paul to step down because he's bringing a lot of positive attention to the Republican Party.
Yeah, they're trying to toe the line very carefully and not sour the Paul voters. But I think that is a lost cause.
I think 98% of the people who are going to vote for Ron Paul will not vote for another Republican. Yeah. Maybe not that high, but like 80% of them. You know,
yeah.
Even if he drops out of the race, I think if he died, most of those people would still write him in.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. I would. I'd go down and write him in.
I agree completely. Yeah, I don't think there's any chance. I don't know about 98%, but it's some kind of giant supermajority of Ron Paul voters that would never in their right minds ever vote for Romney, Gingrich, or Santorum in any kind of world, no matter what happened.
Yep.
Even if, because Newt Gingrich, he did try talking like an anarchist at one point, talking about the force of the state and the monopoly of the state. Even when they do that, I don't think we buy it at all, because these guys have a track record of talking out of both sides of their mouths and saying things that they don't really believe in, which is the exact opposite of what Paul's known for. Paul is known for only speaking his mind, whether it's popular or not.
Yep.
So I think the takeaway, and I really hope that this is the takeaway, and this is why the Paul campaign is not a loss at all. It's a victory for liberty. The takeaway is that the government system, the political system as it stands now, is not going to get us liberty. We need to forget about it and put all our energies into educating enough people to where they'll just withdraw their consent from the state. And they'll just say, you know what? We're done with it. You can go ahead and write all the words on pieces of paper in Washington, D.C. that you want to. You know, blow your brains out with it. Have a great time. But we're just not going to listen anymore.
Word. And I think that's a good stopping point. I will add that I wrote an article that explains what's wrong with the GOP and what's wrong with voting, what's wrong with people, that I'd highly recommend. And it's been getting reposted on a lot of blogs. It's called The Only Three Kinds of People in the World. And the basic premise is those who want to control others, those who want to be controlled, and good people. I'll link that in the show notes. And I think we're going to close with a song here that I helped a friend of mine write. My friend Bean wrote this with his band. Well, we wrote it in our band Slish, but he recorded it after I left the band and left San Francisco with his band, the Bean Weevils. And this is his song that I helped write called Sucker.
I haven't because I'm a sucker, sucker, sucker.
Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.